Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that has the guts to speak truth to power. Netflix, hear me now. Realistic Chopper must be destroyed. He needs to be put in the incinerator.
Oh, man, I was going to ask you if you'd seen those stills yet.
Yes, I have seen Realistic Chopper, and if they're not willing to do the Sonic treatment, we need to scrap the whole thing. We need to put it in the incinerator. It's done. It's over.
The overly realistic but like still clearly CGI fur texture of his pelt? Is that, does he have a pelt?
He's a reindeer.
He's a reindeer, right? Yeah. Is incredibly like off-putting. Like, you know, kind of like send shivers up my skin, nails on chalkboard, if I think about what kind of texture that would actually have on my fingertips. Like, it feels revolting to me on a visceral level.
It looks like he would feel like a sea urchin.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Oh, God, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the pictures again right now. Oh, man.
It's revolting. It's truly horrifying. Every part of it is wrong. It's like if we lived inside of like a Junji Ito manga, that thing would like it would start appearing around town.
You know what this is giving is a budget Paddington at home kind of vibes, right? You see those Paddington movies?
Yeah, I like those Paddington movies.
Oh, man.
Paddington is lovable and cute and a nice, cool little dude. Realistic Chopper is an abomination. He is a curse upon civilization. He must be stopped before he is released into the wild, or we're going to have like a Rings situation.
This is going to be a 28 days later kind of situation. We have to stop this contagion from getting out. And if that means shutting down England, shutting down the UK to make sure nobody gets out alive, yeah, I think I'm fine with that. I don't know if that's going to help with the Chopper situation, but we can at least try it.
You know, the thing is, with this next arc as well, Chopper was the only thing they had to nail. It was the only thing. Everything else is fine. Like, this isn't even like, you know, we're not dealing with like Fishman Island. There's no like fantastic locales. The next place they go to is just a town, like a regular ass town. Okay. And there's a bunch of humans there. And they like shoot guns and stuff. It's like there's barely any devil fruit. They were in the clear. It was clear skies, full winds, and they fucking hit the first rock. This is awful.
So just to clarify, what you're saying they should have done is stuck closer to his kind of mascot-y original cartoony appearance in the manga.
Well, at the risk of ripping a certain comedian off, what they should have done was nothing.
They shouldn't have done this. They just shouldn't have done this.
They should not have done this. They were clearly not prepared. I mean, we went through Sonic. We all lived through that. We saw what happened.
Arguably Sonic came out on top when they did the revision. Those three Sonic movies are making stacks and stacks of those big cash money wads, like year after year. They are so profitable. They're so fucking profitable. Like, it doesn't really, I feel like the amount of money that they have made, whether or not you agree this is like indicative of what I'm talking about, I think it kind of shows that maybe they have surpassed that initial botched release of the Sonic design.
Well, there are two elements at play. One is that I think a lot of fans had a pity watch because they complained so much and then they got what they want. They felt obligated to go see the first one. And then the inertia just carries it through. And the other one is whether you want to believe it or not, whether you like it or not, the Jim Carrey fandom is strong. He's got shooters.
Which is always so surprising to me, consider, you know, the anti-vax stuff. Still not a good look for him.
You know, he's a weirdo. Everybody knows that.
Sure. Well, you're telling me that that man may have unconventional ideas about how the world works?
I was just talking about the Tommy Lee Jones thing when he was in Batman.
He called him a buffoon. I cannot sanction this buffoonery.
I cannot condone your buffoonery. It's one of the funniest things anyone has ever said to another person. It's truly great. Truly great. Two probably very unpleasant people right there.
Yeah.
Interacting with each other. Great, great filmography,
you know, it's,
though.
Honestly, it's not the first time I've heard that about either of them, so it doesn't surprise me.
Oh, yeah. No, from all accounts, Tommy Lee Jones is like a nightmare.
Yeah.
I mean, even in that Two-Face thing, you know, the story was that he came to set and refused to put the makeup on. They showed him the full prosthetic that he was going to wear, and he said, I'm not doing that.
I mean, they got it onto him somehow. I've seen that movie.
No, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. That was just face paint. They had a full prosthetic they were going to have him wear.
Oh.
And he said, I'm not doing that.
I just paint my face. Just airbrush it on.
Yeah. That's why he looks so weird in that movie. Because that was not the original makeup.
Okay.
They just had to make something up so that he didn't spend 4 hours in the trailer every morning. And frankly, that's what Netflix should do. Take this guy out. Just delete the footage. Just erase the footage. Get rid of the 3D models. Do it fucking Cool World style. Just draw a little cartoon guy.
Do a Roger Rabbit?
Do a Roger Rabbit.
I would unironically, like, full support 100% if they did a Roger Rabbit with the more cartoonish aspects of One Piece and just intermixed, like, the live-action characters in. That would be the greatest show ever made.
It would be fantastic, and it would show a real dedication to the craft.
That would be a spectacular modern achievement, especially to people who know like how much work it went into making Roger Rabbit. Imagine what Netflix can do with One Piece.
Yeah, I mean, they're killing these animators anyway. Might as well have them do something cool, right? I would unironically truly, truly enjoy that more than what we got, even though we did say when the first season came out, we did do the episode and we said mostly we were pretty positive on it. I would still vastly prefer if they had gone a Roger Rabbit in that season. And much like what I'm picturing is, you'll remember I talked about Japan's worst rated movie ever. The early 2000s Devilman,
yes,
live action,
mm-hmm.
And how much I liked it despite its apparently universal revulsion. And the thing I really liked about that movie, one of the things, is that during the height of each action scene, they would insert frames of animation. I mentioned this, right?
Yeah. Yes. You've talked about this before.
It was like one of the coolest effects I've ever seen. It was so incredible. Like, just full on, they would just have these like split second, like recreations of the manga panels that would just cut in between the action. And it was like a perfect match cut, you know? So it looks like it was flashing in and out of like cartoon style. And mm-hmm. It was like, that is fucking cool. And nobody else has really done it. The only time I ever really see it is, I don't know if you ever saw the, it's so stupid, but they did a couple of like NBA Sprite ads where the, you know, you'd have LeBron or, you know, Kyrie or whoever was in those ads, like dunking or whatever. And like, they would have an impact frame of them as a cartoon and then it would go back to live action. That's like the only other time I've actually seen that technique deployed. And it's still cool.
I can only think of the Drake Sprite commercial where he's a Sprite powered robot.
you can't think of Drake anymore. You have to erase Drake. Drake has been removed from this timeline. he has been annihilated.
Listen, he lost the beef with the Shadow Prince of Games, and he got Yu-Gi-Oh'd out of existence. He's exiled. Yeah.
We've forgotten about him. He's gone into the Nega Zone.
Oh man, have they made a like a Kaiji-styled death game, but for rap beefs yet? if you lose the rat beef, you get exiled out of the universe.
Nick Cannon was running sort of a game show that was that concept. I don't know if you ever watched that. I think it was on BET or
no.
Either that or I'm very racist.
Well, you know, it can be two things.
Just in case I am racist, I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, fact check that.
It was called Wildin' Out.
Oh, yeah, sure. Nick Cannon's Wildin' Out. That was on MTV.
It was on MTV. Oh, God, I am racist. Fuck. Wildin' Out was sort of like that because if you lost, you were destroyed.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Well, that was more like the, you know, the, what do you call it? The insult, like, back and forth, like, banter. Kind of thing.
Yeah, it was a death game.
Yeah, a death game of words.
A death game of words. I used to watch a lot of rap battles. I got really into that for a while.
Well, I mean, I know that at least in a couple death games that you've talked about, you know, that Japanese word game where you kind of have to match words with like words that start with the same syllable as the previous words ending, kind of thing.
Yes.
That's been used a few times in various overall death game stories as, you know, as the death game. If you lose, then
sure.
Then you get taken out or whatever. But I wonder if there's one that's like entirely that. That'd be kind of a cool concept, you know, increasingly complex kind of word games.
You know, that stuff is obviously lost on us because we don't speak Japanese.
Sure.
That is one of the frustrating things of being an anime fan who refuses to learn the language. Similarly, in one of the newer manga I'm reading right now, the characters kind of recreationally play that game. You know, that game that's they have a series of cards, and all the cards have, like, poems on them, right?
Sure.
And it's like a bunch of very famous poems, and a third person reads the first couple words of one of the poems, and the player that picks up the card first like wins that round.
Okay.
Apparently this is like a very popular game.
Interesting. I've not run across that one yet, but I understand the concept.
Apparently this is like a huge thing. Like there's like tournaments and shit.
Huh.
It's called Hyakunin Ishu Karuta.
No.
Karuta, I guess.
No, I've never run across that.
There's all these fucking cards. It's called Hyakunin Ishu because it's 100 poets.
Okay.
And each card has one poem on it. And the reader reads the first word. And the whole idea is that there is a bunch of words that sound similar in Japanese, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to really, like, really know every single poem and how they start and be able to interpret, like, the first word of each of these poems, which sounds, frankly, both overly complex and mind-numbingly boring to me, but apparently they're really into it.
You know what? Actually, this is starting to come back. I'm pretty sure that they did this in a chapter of Kaguya-sama, Love is War.
Oh, I'm sure. Kaguya would certainly be the high-class lady who knows all of the all of the hyakunin.
Yes, yeah.
That's very much up her alley.
Mm-hmm.
None of which changes the fact that the realistic chopper must be destroyed.
Bringing it home. So, once again, we are using our platform as the fifth and possibly sixth pillar of government to put a call out there to the people, to the masses, to Netflix. Just stop. Think about what you're doing. Think about the people that you're hurting.
They got high off their first success. They're sitting pretty. They thought, you know what? We can do anything. We can do anything we want, and these dumbasses will just lap it up.
Now, just to be clear, when you refer to their first success, are you talking about One Piece Season 1?
No, I'm talking about the Arrested Development continuation.
Yeah, no, I think you could have been talking about 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, that one. Definitely that one.
The high-budget Oda adaptation of 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, the pro-suicide show. Yeah, that was a really good one.
Or the edgy Sabrina show. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Love that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any of these could be listed as successes. You could have been talking about the smash hit from 2023 Adam's Family spinoff show Wednesday.
I do not talk about that.
It's for the better.
I do not.
We don't talk about Wednesday.
I don't mention it. I don't talk about that. I'm done with Tim Burton. In fact, when Tim Burton showed up in that Paul Rubens documentary, I had to avert my eyes.
He is looking a bit rough these days.
No, it was from back then. It was when they were working on the movie.
Uh-huh.
Paul Rubenfeld, by the way. I'm not going to call him Rubens anymore. I'm going to call him his real name. Paul Rubenfeld. There's no shame in it. When he says Tim Burton was the only one who could out-goof him, I was like, oh, I think I would kill both of these guys if I had to hang out with them.
Well, you know, it's funny. I really enjoyed that documentary, which I'm just going to say anybody listening should go watch it because it's really interesting, especially if you like, you know, the character of Pee Wee Herman at all.
Or if you hate him.
Or that too. It goes on both ends of the spectrum.
Or if you just hate improv comedy.
But I did not realize that Paul Rubenfeld, was such a control freak about, like, not only the character, but just projects that he worked on, like, to the point where he was, like, telling the documentary maker that he was working with. By the way, he commissioned the documentary about himself. Always kind of like a side eye thing there.
I, to be honest, I didn't hear a lot of his answers because we were chanting jerk off, jerk off, jerk off basically the entire time.
Wow. How disrespectful.
And we didn't get to it either.
It was in the second episode. That was like,
yeah, it was in the second part.
Yeah. It was kind of the main focus. I almost felt like they did him a little dirty because, you know, Paul Rubens died during the production of the documentary. He did not get to finish all of the interviews that they had planned. And it felt like structurally they saved talking about all of the scandals until the end, when they couldn't interview him about it anymore. So it's like the interview footage that they have with him abruptly stops, and then they go and like, oh yeah, and then the jerk off thing, oh yeah, and then getting arrested for lewd material thing, and all of that, and with no like back and forth input from Paul on those subjects. That felt a little weird to me. That felt a little kind of like,
oh, you think they sandbagged him?
You don't got to do him like that. I think they sandbagged him a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
After his death, a post-mortem sandbagging.
Well, yeah, saving all of the less savory aspects of his personal story, his career, until after he can't give his own take on them.
Well, you don't know. Maybe that when he was alive, they were like, Paul, we want to talk about this. And he's like, I'm not going to talk about that. That sounds very...
Well, no, actually, that is pretty much what happened. They say that they got to that point of the interviews, and then he got kind of like, he's like, I want to reschedule this interview. And then he stopped taking their calls for like a year.
Yeah.
And then he died.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Yeah. So, you know, a complex man. I feel like he got done dirty by a lot of people, including the media, but also a fucking weirdo.
Yeah.
He's one of them weirdos.
All he wanted to do was make sexual content for children, and people had to go out there and skewer him for it. Do you think they'll get to the public jerk off part in the Hideo Kojima documentary? Do you think they'll, or will he cut it out too?
You know, that time he went to NASA and took his dick out?
Yeah, yeah. I was just trying to 3D scan it so I could put it into the next Death Stranding, of course. You know, there is a lot of shower scenes in this new Death Stranding game.
You know, I hear that in that new Death Stranding game, what's his face from Walking Dead? What's his name?
It's no, his name's Death Stranding guy. Yeah. I think it's Sam America.
Yeah, Sam Bridges.
Sam America Bridges.
I hear Sam America Bridges hangs dong in this one.
Oh, he fucking better. I'm tired of these fucking cowards.
Yeah.
Out here being cowardly.
I don't want any like cutesy little artistic interpretation of digital pixels coming out to represent his piss. I want to see full on water sports. With the Walking Dead guy.
You know, it really does. Sometimes it feels like we're moving backwards. I read a lot of these manga and like, what is the deal where like they self-censor all kinds of stuff now?
Oh, the thing that bugs me the most is, and I guess this is like a whole thing in like the Twitter art circle, but the debate on whether or not you should draw a caricaturized butthole on animals.
Well, I'm just for aesthetic reasons, I am against that. I was thinking more of like, they do it for ridiculous stuff. Like the amount of pixelated cockroaches I have seen in manga and anime is just insane.
I understand what you're saying. Or pixelated barfing.
Yes, or just like kind of gore.
You know, I don't know enough about Japanese censorship and like television content laws. So I'm just going to make stuff up.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make it up. So I'm pretty sure that it has to do with vomit and stuff like that falling under like their anti-TV violence laws. You know, there's certain you can't show red blood on anime. Did you know that? Whenever you see someone bleed red in an anime, that's an international release of the episode. They have to censor it.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no. The Japanese cut of JoJo, all of the blood and violence and stuff in those episodes, they're all like covered up by tasteful shadows blocking half the screen.
So they're like Germany.
Yeah, they're like Germany with video games. You know, like in Wolfenstein, they had to change the Nazis to having green blood. Say they were like
green blood.
They were zombies or alien Nazis or something like that.
That is fucking insane.
Yeah, no, you can't show bleeding on like primetime Japanese television shows. And I'm not making that up. That's not me being a liar.
That's so crazy.
Yeah,
because
like, I lie a lot.
And, well, you lie a lot, but also like Goku is bleeding out of his mouth in almost every scene in Dragon Ball Z.
I don't know what to tell you, but it, maybe they weren't always in effect in the way that they are now. But I know that is a current day thing. Like there is a certain time frame that you can air shows where you're not allowed to show like a whole list of stuff. And that's where all of that pixelation and like kind of cheeky censorship that you're talking about comes from.
It's insane. But I see that in manga now too, like a lot of manga.
Uh-huh.
And that just doesn't make any sense to me. Let's do your NPR voice. Do you think Japan is becoming more culturally conservative?
Well, you know, it's hard to tell. It's definitely an issue of economy and an issue mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. population and population yeah. demographics. They have a lot of mm-hmm. disabused young men who are, I don't want to sound condescending. That would be the last thing that I would want to do. But mm-hmm. they do have an issue with young men being jobless, being listless in their ambitions, and it is affecting the job market. They mm-hmm. the phenomenon of the NEET, the not in education, employment, or training moniker.
Yes, I believe they call it hikikomoriism over there.
Yes, mm-hmm. uh-huh. yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite a thing. You know, if you see it up hand.
And how does this contribute to the male loneliness epidemic?
Well, you know, it's as with many things in this world, it's an issue of socialization. These young men just are not getting the education that they need to thrive and to prosper in a social environment, you know. And I believe that it's a bit of a chicken and the egg scenario when we come to the topic of misogyny within the Japanese culture and
of
how
course.
It plays
mm-hmm.
in to the economy and their current day. It's not quite a depression yet, so we're going to call it a recession, but mm-hmm. you know how we love to split hairs about that.
Yes, of course. And what do you think about the movement for government mandated girlfriends?
Oh, I'm for it.
it's really picking up steam. Wasn't that the Japanese Joker's entire platform when he was running for Tokyo mayorship?
The mandatory girlfriend platform.
Yeah.
Which is now, of course, just the plot of 1,000 different Arrow mangas and hentai mangas. Like, that's just
not even that. I mean, fucking, that was the plot of Domestic Girlfriend.
Oh, more than a less than a married couple, more than lovers, something like that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. 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 Exactly.
This is my school mandated girlfriend. She's such a bitch. I hate her so much. I wish she would like
my
me.
My wife.
Yeah.
Oh, I gotta get home. My government mandated wife is making me omu rice. Sorry, honey. Soccer ran long today.
Mm-hmm. It really is like just that kind of whole flavoring. It's the most detestable type of rom-com that is mainstream right now because it is popping up all over the fucking place. And
oh,
it's really disturbing. I hate it.
Yet again, I say it. This is a very, very sincerely. This is a failure of the cultural imagination that now young men, even in fiction, cannot imagine themselves like organically meeting a girl and like flirting with her and getting a girlfriend. Like, even in their wildest imaginations, they can't imagine that scenario.
Well, like, okay.
Whereas you go back and you read like 80s manga, mm-hmm. like I mentioned when I was reading Satoshi Kon, his earlier stuff, right? Where it's like young people, normal young people doing normal things.
Yeah, like flirting you know? And going on dates and talking yeah. to girls or boys.
Hanging out with your friend and like driving to the beach and then you like meet people there and you have a good time and you play volleyball or something. And like, that's the whole story.
It's the antithesis. And I think of like what's going on with a lot of these modern day rom-coms. And I think the worst one, like the shining example of what you're talking about is you've heard of My First Girlfriend is a Gyaru.
Yes, of course. Yes.
And you know how based and Gyaru pilled I am. I can't resist it. It is my
naturally.
It is my Soylent Green, my addiction.
We're all quite familiar.
Yeah. So I decided to check that one out a while ago, and I couldn't get through it. I dropped it maybe. I got maybe 20 chapters in before I got so fed up with this absolute loser that was the main character, because most of these Gyaru comics that. I'm not like trying to say that I've read quality out there. I read all of Gyaru Gohan, and that was absolute trash, like
Jesus
top to bottom.
Christ.
I could not deal with this one because the entire bit is that the main character is just not a veiled incel, not like implied to be like on the verge of it. He is a full blown woman hating incel type dude. And the entire bit of the comic is this girl in his class, for whatever fucking reason that I still have not figured out, that she never revealed, at least to me in the short time I read it, why she likes him. But she gives him an incredibly sincere, like, hey, I think that you're kind of a cool dude and like we should go out, like we should hang out and like go on a date or something, get to know each other.
Sure.
And he is in such like vitriolic disbelief that he thinks that every like action and sentence that she does or says to him is somehow a veiled threat or insult.
Sure.
And so it's just him seething, his internal monologue seething to the audience about like, well, she only invited me over to her house for dinner with her parents because she wants to make fun of me and have them, and they're all going to laugh at me together.
Oh, yeah.
And she's going to say like, I can't believe that you actually showed up at my house. You're such a loser. And then he shows up anyway with this assumption, in a bad attitude, is fucking rude to her, is fucking rude to her parents. And they're just like the most welcoming, chill people. And at the end, he still cannot believe that they're just being like normal people to him. And he's like, well, she's just biding her time. I'll be ready for her next time.
Delusional paranoiac.
Yeah, delusional paranoia, verging on like schizoaffective symptoms.
This is the normie scenario where,
yes,
you know, these kids are like, I hate normies, death to normies, without realizing that that is actually also normie behavior.
You know what? People are going to go crazy when they realize that R. Crumb invented all of this.
Yeah.
Like that was his entire self-insert whenever he put himself into a comic. Who's just like, wow, I hope that bitch fucks me. God, I hate normies.
But he was also self-aware of it, and he was like deep in self-loathing because he knew he was a piece of shit. Like, that was also the thing about R. Crumb, was he was like deeply ashamed of his own weird behavior. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's similar. I also was viscerally repelled by that other Yara one. My girlfriend is more experienced than me.
Uh-huh. I never just got to that one, but you've talked about it.
Literally just like, what? Here's the crazy thing about this girl. She's dated before.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Man. Oh. My girlfriend's damaged goods.
Something Christmas cake.
You, yeah. None of you deserve these girls. None of you.
And before all of the simp comments, which I welcome, by the way, please comment. I don't care if they're insults at this point. Comment.
Yeah, I'll take
like
it.
Like and subscribe.
I don't care. Call us woke. Call us woke garbage. I don't care.
Woke normie cucks.
Yeah, we're woke normie cucks. Bring it on. Let's hear it.
But yeah, I think that whole attitude is very indicative of like the modern rom-com scene. And definitely different than, say, kind of the 80s sex comedies that, like, 80s and 90s, you know, your Tenchi Muyo's, your... even that one is getting a little bit, like, on the edge, you know? That's kind of indulging in the male, like, harem fantasy to the extreme.
Oh, you think?
Yeah. But, okay, but, like, Urusei Yatsura, the main guy in that, starts off the series with a girlfriend that he's in a relationship with, and they're having an argument because he flirts too much with other women. And that's like our roguish, like good guy character that we're supposed to sympathize with.
I do think it is interesting that, that character has been, he is now much like in Fooly Cooly, even though that was a while back, that character is now the dad of the main characters, you know?
Yeah. That happens all the time. That's actually, you know, right off the top of my head, Usagi wants to hang out. That's like a big thing in that one.
Yeah.
The main character has like a deadbeat, roguish kind of Han Solo type dad.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I was reading, you know, the other episode I did mention, I was reading a bunch of shoujo manga. And one of the ones I was reading is called Mr. Yano's Ordinary Days.
Okay.
Which is a shoujo manga about a girl who's like a pretty normie. She's definitely a normie, but she starts noticing this boy who comes to class every single day banged up to hell. Like, he's covered in band-aids and just like fucked up, right?
Well, you know, the first rule is that you're not supposed to talk about it.
Well, she doesn't. She's very polite about it for a while. But she keeps noticing, like, this is every day. And this is, like, new cuts and scrapes. And she starts to get, like, seriously concerned, which you probably should if you notice somebody is, like, fucked up every single day.
Yeah, especially if they're, like, a kid, like, in your class.
Yeah.
Like, if you see your... Hey, kids, if you see your friends coming in beat up every day, tell somebody. Yeah. Tell somebody about
She's
it.
She's constantly like, DV? Is it DV? And then her and her friend one day just stalk him, and they realize, no, he is just like supernaturally clumsy. Like, he is just, he falls over all the time.
Oh, he's a Mr. Magoo.
Yeah, he's a Mr. Magoo who gets seriously injured by his own goofy antics.
That's very funny. I like that setup.
Yeah. And so she develops a crush on him, and she develops their relationship by like taking care of him, right? It's a real like nurturing mother kind of thing. But one day she goes to his house and she meets his dad, who is also, like, this is genetic, right? His dad is also fucked up constantly.
Sure.
And his dad looks so tired. That was a joke I really enjoyed. He just looks tired as hell. But, like, his son steps out of the room for a second, and he's like, so do you like my son? And she's like, oh, my God, how'd you know? And he's like, well, I'm an adult. I'm like emotionally mature. I understand.
Yeah.
Really basic shit. But I just want to warn you, like, my son is, he's essentially at the bottom of Laszlo's hierarchy of needs because he's in constant danger of himself. He might not actually reach like a higher point in the hierarchy where he can like reciprocate your feelings. So I just want to warn you. And I was like, that is a really funny joke. That's really good. I like that.
That's good.
But yeah, that's a manga I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? What have you been reading?
Well, this is kind of a good segue from what we were talking about because of this like kind of all pervasive awfulness in the modern rom-com scene.
Yeah.
I've started trying to seek out like Gyaru comics that just don't feature that. And I actually found a couple that I was pretty much charmed by.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And they're kind of similar, so I'm just going to talk about them kind of back to back, but because they're both doing a lot of the same stuff. But the first one I wanted to talk about was I started reading a kind of slice of life gag comic called Mane Mane Nichi Nichi. Have you heard about this?
No. What is this?
So this is a comic from Soichiro Yamamoto, who had another kind of long-form manga that they were doing a while ago called Teasing Master Takagi-san.
Yes, I know that
one. Which you may have heard
of. Yes, I know that one.
Yes. So this is the same guy that did that. This is kind of him atoning for the sin of creating like the sexualized bully trope that has been plaguing rom-coms for the last like 5 years or so.
Yeah. It's funny how these terms develop too, because I noticed like once harem became a thing, they started calling girl-centric ones reverse harems.
Yeah.
And now the teasing thing is so ingrained that now there are reverse teasing mangas.
So this one is about a trio of high school friends. Well, not, that's kind of, it's actually kind of a sticking point of the whole premise, is they're not really friends. They are three separate girls in high school that all signed up to be managers for the school baseball team. The joke being is that none of them, or at least two out of the three of them, don't give a shit about baseball at all. And they signed up for like completely selfish reasons.
Understandable.
Yeah. So you have, kind of the main central girl, who is your standard, I want to say, like, shoujo female protagonist, like the quirky subtype. She's kind of airheaded. She has a lot of grandiose ideas. She's very, has a very self-inflated sense of ego about how popular she is in the grand hierarchy of the school. And she signed up specifically because she thought that being a baseball manager was a much more prestigious position than it actually is. Because if you don't know, at least in terms of high school baseball, a manager is basically a glorified bat boy. Like, they gather up the equipment at the end of practice and like set up the field for games and like polish the balls.
In high school level baseball, yeah, like the GM is not making trades.
Yes, exactly. So she didn't realize this. The only thing she had ever really heard about baseball at all was like her family talking about Major League doing exactly that, like trades and game scores and stuff. But she does not know how the game works at all. And to the comic's credit, it's not really about that. They don't go too much into the baseball aspect of it. But you have the quiet kind of bookish one, who joined the manager because her boyfriend was on the team, and then she broke up with him to date a different player, and her joke is that she's kind of like on and off dating with everybody on the team.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you have the third one, which is the Gyaru character, and everyone is supposed to kind of project that she's going to be the airhead. But she's actually super, super into baseball, like really into it. She's in it for the love of the game.
Yeah.
And so she actually acts as kind of the straight man kind of foil to the drama and wackiness of the other two. But
okay,
that's kind of the setup.
So she's the one keeping track of everybody's RBIs.
Exactly. Oh, she has, it's a running joke that she has like library stacks of self-made notebooks of all of the team members, like baseball stats and stuff.
Yeah. She's like hassling. She's doing the Gyaru teasing, but it's like about people's batting averages.
No, that's what the Gyaru in the baseball field concession stand anime was about. That was her thing. She's like all business. She's fucking throwing chairs at people. She's getting in fights with the ump over plays.
Oh, damn. You're not supposed to do that.
You're not supposed to do that.
Never helps.
But I don't know. What I like about this one, what drew me into it, is that it's A, it's not about baseball, which I deeply sympathize with. I also do not give a shit about baseball, just like these, well, most of these characters. And B, I like that it's not really about romance. I mean, it isn't at all. You have like this kind of background joke, which is like not that funny, of the one girl who keeps like going, who keeps starting to date and then breaking up with everybody on the team.
Sure.
And it's not done in like a sexual way. It's just kind of making fun of the capriciousness of like fucking high school romances. Like, come on.
Sure. Yeah. The dalliances of youth.
Yeah. But what I like is that they have like genuinely fun conversations and banter with each other. Like they are not ostensibly friends, and that actually is kind of like a little mini arc that they go through, is this realization that they start off as three people, like three strangers who just happen to be on the same, in the same group, you know, like doing a group project in class basically.
Sure.
And then over time coming to realize that they actually like each other and are friends outside of this like one little contextual bubble. And I find that really endearing. I like that.
Yes.
I like there's this chapter where the Gyaru, who is, you know, playing against type as a character, she's like the quiet, soft-spoken, like thinking one. She's kind of stern and she's very serious about paying attention to the game. And it's a, like a running thing with her that everyone keeps self-ascribing the title of Gyaru to her, like putting that on her, and she's just like,
yeah,
you know, you guys, like, I don't really consider myself that because I don't like, I'm not really into the subculture, I just have a tan and like bleaching my hair, like this
this is the thing we were talking about.
Yeah. Like, yes.
If they don't call themselves Gyaru, isn't it like weird that we all just call them that?
And that's like her, that's the entire kind of joke with her character, is that everyone keeps describing her as the Gyaru one, and she's just like, I like bleaching my hair and the school allows it, and I spend a lot of time outside because of baseball, so I have a tan.
Yeah.
But you're calling me that, not me.
Yeah. It's like a weird thing that you are projecting onto me.
Yeah. I like them acknowledging that whole concept. I think that's really fun.
I do like that. I find, like, you know, like we've talked about before, the like girl friendship thing is genuinely like usually the funnier comics.
Mm-hmm.
Most comedies that actually work are about girl friendships.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I was getting at, was they had a whole chapter about the, again, quote unquote, Gyaru one, talking to one of her other like school friends, like someone that she describes as a friend, about the other girls in the manager club. And, you know, she's like agonizing over like the entire day, or it's like, well, do I call this person a friend? Like, they're not really my friend. They haven't called me their friend yet. Like, what do I call our relationship? Like, and she's kind of like just kind of obsessing over this idea the entire day and not sure how to like label this other person in their life.
Sure.
And then very casually at the end of the chapter, you know, the other two come up to her and she's like, oh, hey, like we were talking about you to our other friends. Like, we wanted to introduce you because you're our friend too. and so just, you know, this juxtaposition of how much people care about like the way they label and what like constitutes being a friend.
Sure.
You know, I like that.
Very fraught for some reason.
Yeah. I can only imagine it's even more fraught within the Japanese school system.
Yeah. Well, you know, it is funny. I was thinking about that because I was reading Phantom Busters, which is kind of a newer comic. It's very fun. It's about a group of four boys who all kind of form like an exorcism club because one kid can exorcise ghosts, but he can't see them or hear them. And then one boy can only see them and one boy can only hear them. So they have to like form a fucking Megazord to like get rid of one ghost. but it becomes more about like their genuine friendship because they like each other and they like spending time with each other. And it's just like an actual genuine friendship. And I was thinking the entire time reading that, you know, the joke about anime for so long is like, oh, with the power of friendship. But if you read a lot of anime and watch a lot of manga, there's not a lot of friendship. There's not a lot of like genuine friendship in any of this shit. There's not people who like just like each other.
No, at best, it's like group trauma.
Yeah.
Like trauma bonding.
Yeah, it's mostly like, oh no, oh, we fought so hard together and you're my comrade in arms. But it's never like, hey, let's just hang out and like have banter and like enjoy our time together. That is so rare. And especially the thing that struck me about Phantom Busters is like, especially with male friendships.
Yes.
Because obviously masculinity is in such a massive fucking crisis right now, especially in Japan, that like for most of these manga and anime, it is inconceivable for a main character to simply enjoy the company of another man.
Well, that's okay. That's one of the things that I wanted to bring up. You hit it right on the head because, you know, both of these manga that I've been reading, that one and another one called See You Tomorrow in the Food Court, mm-hmm. are both kind of this idea of like, you know, just gals being pals and just like having genuine like relationships where they like hang out and talk about stuff like regular people would. Like, I know that sounds reductive, but it's incredibly refreshing sometimes when it seems like the extent of relationships, especially male relationships in manga, like, has to center around solving some kind of world-ending fantasy crisis, right? You know?
Yeah.
Like, I could not think of I can think of several anime and manga that are just about a group of girlfriends hanging out doing normal stuff and having like fun conversations with each other and joking around. And I cannot think of one that is just about a group of guy friends doing that doesn't
there
have like
few.
A shonen power system attached to it.
Yeah. Or like they're rivals. I mean, yeah, like the biggest comedy manga and anime really are that, you know, Azumanga Daioh, Nichijou, Asobe, Asobase, right?
Yeah.
Like all of these are just about like girls hanging out and being normal and enjoying their company of each other and like their weird quirks or whatever. Almost all the ones that feature a male protagonist is one guy and a bunch of girls.
Yes. Yeah. You either have Asobe Asobase, or you have the one about the perverted guy whose sister wants to fuck him and he's in love with the Russian girl.
Yeah. Or the, you know, the next season, the student council also has Holes, which is a fucking terrible name, is exactly this, where, you know, the protagonist joins the student council and is surrounded by these strange female characters, including one who is a guy who just looks like a girl. And the joke is that he is just treated like a girl by everybody.
A little bit of that anime gender fluidity.
Yeah, yeah, except it's really more about his whole joke is that you don't really, he's drawn exactly like every other anime girl and he acts like anime girls and he talks like anime girls, except sometimes he'll show the camera his nipple and be like, oh, I'm a guy though. And that's his entire joke.
That's kind of a weird way to do that joke. I can think of other ways to do that joke, I think.
Well, they do that joke in a million different ways. But it is the same joke over and over again. But yeah, look forward to that. That'll be next season.
Yeah, you know, I personally prefer Yujiro Hanma's take on sexuality. Anything that turns me on as a woman.
Yeah, That is true hypermasculinity right there.
Listen, I'm a man, therefore anything I'm attracted to is a woman.
That's like that old thing about like table legs being too sexy. You have to put the tablecloth over them. Oh shit.
All right, let me tell you just real quick a little bit about this other one that I was reading. This one I actually just discovered. This is the like third time I've done this on this show, but discovered a manga only to find out that it's going to have an anime adaptation starting next season.
Oh yeah, which one?
This is See You Tomorrow in the Food Court.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Which is another, you know, setup of just two normal friends being normal with each other. This is, like, the setup is, it starts off with these two middle school friends, and they're graduating, and they're going to different high schools. And so they decide that they're going to meet at the food court of the train station that they both get home, that they both take to get home, you know, after both of their schools get out. And it's just these little snippets of them meeting up and talking about their day and talking about like stuff that happened and making jokes with each other. And then, you know, they have to go to work and they have to go to their separate ways. And those are the little, you know, kind of vignette chunks, is just a little slice of life. You know, vertical slice of these two girls that, you know, have been friends for a long time, and they go out of their way to maintain a relationship in the hustle and bustle of 2025 Tokyo. I think that's cool. I think that setup is very sweet. I like that. But what I really like about this, and I want to acknowledge that this may be just as much a effort of the translation team as it is of the manga author, but it has a style of humor that I don't see done, or at least done well, very often in anime and manga. And that is like the early setup, distraction joke in the middle, and then kind of bringing it home with a callback punchline, which this author is really, really good at. And I think that's it's a really funny gag when it works out. So, yeah. Like, as an example, you know, I posted a screenshot of it the other day to you, but you have this one character who is, again, the Gyaru character, quote unquote. She's doesn't really like use that word to describe herself, but she also doesn't like hasn't gone out of her way to say like I'm not a Gyaru.
she hasn't denied it.
She hasn't denied it, but she, you know, she's doing the fact that she's doing specifically like the short skirt and the hair scrunchies and everything makes me lean towards Gyaru on this one. Anyway, she is also doing the kind of playing against type joke where she is kind of the soft-spoken, stern, quiet one who thinks a lot. And she's in contrast to the kind of honor student presenting girl, but on the inside she's actually kind of like a girl failure kind of archetype. She she's an addict to this like Prince gotcha game that she's obsessed with, and she's jealous and kind of shallow and like quick to yell and argue with people. Basically they're type switching, right? She's acting how you would expect the Gyaru to act and vice versa. And throughout the entire chapter, the Gyaru one is kind of just staring at her phone doing whatever, while the other one is waxing about all the troubles she's having with she's upset that the gotcha prince that she's obsessed with is getting popularity online, and she doesn't want to share his popularity with other people.
Such a weird thing, but
yeah, such a weird concept. And she's like, by the way, what have you been doing? And they were having this conversation about like, yeah, you know, I travel overseas. I like America, and it's not that hard to get around. Like, if you know a little bit of English, this is the Gyaru saying this. Yeah. And she's like, basically, you know, all you need to know is, like, I don't speak English. And if someone says something you don't understand, just say, I don't understand. But, like, you know, set out in English syllables, you know?
Yeah.
And then they're kind of, like, going back and forth. And she's like, by the way, what are you doing on your phone? She's like, oh, I'm practicing like my English for this quiz coming up.
I'm doing Duolingo.
Yeah, she's basically, yeah, I'm doing Duolingo so that I can study like for this test. And she's like, what, you've been studying this entire time? Like, say some English for me. And she spouts off this super long excerpt from the like very verbose, archaic English translation of Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
weird selection for English, but okay.
Yeah, but that's where the solemnity is the shield of idiots quote that I got is from. And then, you know, it's like at the, she goes through this whole long quote saying it in perfect English. And then at the end, the setup is that the other girl is supposed to be very impressed by it. And then with like super loud, like fiery conviction, she fires back with an, I don't understand you. and it's very funny when you read it out on the page, but stuff like that, like a good sense of joke structure and setup and payoff, that I feel like is rare in a lot of comedy manga, because so much of Japanese humor, it seems to me, is character does something out of the ordinary, and then everybody around them says, wow, that person is so weird. Isn't that weird how they did that?
It's weird that they did that instead of the normal way that you would usually do it.
Yeah, but they did it this way, and that's weird. Oh, I bet they're dangerous.
It's a very old-fashioned straight man thing that, again, reminds me that, like, you know, like when I was complaining about that Rakugo manga that got really popular, is like, I just wish like their style of humor, especially like the comedy duo thing, feels like 50 years behind the rest of the world, you know. And I've always felt bad about thinking that, because obviously that's America brain, but at the same time, yeah, we finished up comedy straight man tall guy small guy comedy like in the 30s. We moved on, we developed out of that. It's like Japan is still waiting for their like Bill Hicks, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't think that there's been a real comedy revolution in Japan the way that, say, there was in like the 1950s in like the New York comedy scene, right, where you start getting a lot more like personal kind of storytelling type of comedy with a lot of the acts. I'm trying to remember the name of that very famous comedian that got arrested for indecency.
Paul Rubenfeld.
Yes, Paul Rubenfeld, exactly. Pee-wee Herman himself. But yeah, they haven't had that movement in their comedy scene. I think the closest thing that they've gotten is they skipped like straight from Manzai, like double, like straight man, wacky guy acts, which, you know, was basically set up in like the late 70s, which also happens to be the last time their electrical infrastructure was updated. So I think those two go hand in hand somehow.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, it's like that, and then they jump straight to YouTube influencer, like, I'm going to go into this haunted house, guys, like kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like YouTube skits and like man on the street prank shows,
sure,
have been the like comedy act du jour for the last 20 years in Japan, as far as I can tell.
It is funny that skit, like sketch comedy, like independent sketch comedy, is the only alt comedy that we get exposed to. Like I do really wonder, like, what is the underground and like alt comedy scene over there, because obviously we don't get it, but like in anime and manga, we do not have an alt comedy scene, and we do not have a Bill Hicks. we you know.
Well, okay. The thing is
we have four panels.
The thing is that, and this is like me spitballing here, but it feels like there aren't really alt scenes the way we think of them in Japan. There are underground scenes, there are niche scenes, but there, none of these like subgenres, subgroups, like the Visual K, you know, underground bands, indie bands, stuff like that, like they are not trying to actually revolutionize the industry, you know, in the way that I feel an alternative scene with the way that phrase has connotation here does, you know?
Yeah.
The alternative comedy scene from the 90s in America, that had an explicit pushback to the sanitized kind of like go on Johnny Carson, do your 5 minutes, don't offend anybody kind of like comedy scene from the 80s, right?
Well, even when they transitioned to Letterman, like Letterman felt an alt comedy reaction to stuff like Carson, in that like he was the establishment, but at the same time he was where alt comedy was happening.
Yeah.
And it took like people rebelling against Letterman to have an actual alt comedy scene, like, you know, where like Janine Garofalo or whatever came from.
Yeah. And what I'm trying to get at is that like these scenes in Japan are kind of viewed as more as like quirky hobbies that you do to blow off steam on the weekend, and then you put it aside and go back to your desk job during the day or your convenience store job or whatever. It's not something where it's like, no, like that is my focus and I am trying to grow and expand the art form. It's this is like pickleball that I go to on the weekends with my parents' friends.
Well, I do think there is that thing. I'm kind of low key obsessed with the idea of the underground idol or like the anti idol.
Yeah.
In the way that it seems adjacent to like punk culture, but at the same time, it is not trying to destroy idolism. It is trying to warp idolism into something that could potentially be counterculture.
Well, I mean, I think that is a generous way to view it. I think the more cynical way to look at it is that it is a stepping stone platform onto transitioning a idol into being mainstream.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to carry their indie act, their underground idol act, once they make it big. They're going to do what the executives tell them to do.
Yeah, it's very strange. I really don't know what to think. I can only view it through the lens of, you know, what I get here. But what I get here, what gets filtered here, is bizarre.
I mean, you know, we're living in hellscape techno hell. Nothing makes sense anymore. I've totally checked out of trying to interpret reality in an objective way. I'm just kind of like going off vibes at this point.
Yes. Well, and like our constant refrain, at least mine, is that we are completely at the whims and mercy of the translators.
Yeah, exactly.
Like we said before.
You know, like, which is why I mentioned that the comedy that I'm enjoying in See You Tomorrow at the Food Court may as well be as much of a work from the translation team as it is from the original author, you know?
Yeah.
But in either case, I really like it. I think that it's very charming. And like I said, it's doesn't feature an absolute milquetoast, like, dickhead of a male protagonist, like, constantly inserting himself into these lives just to make, like, women fawn over him.
Yeah.
In defiance of logic. Again, don't like that. I'm over it. I think that's weird. And so should you, dear listener.
Well, speaking of those two things,
yeah,
translators and milquetoast dudes, let me tell you what I've been reading.
Okay, all right. Oh, boy. All right, here we go.
Well, I want to touch on this because this is only going to be relevant for another couple days. I've been playing 100 Line Last Defense Academy.
Quite a title.
Are you familiar with this?
Well, only in the way that you've been comparing it to Signalis in our group chat.
I am not trying to compare those two. They are unlike as you could possibly get. This is a sort of mostly visual novel by the guy who did Danganronpa.
Okay, all right,
and the guy who did Zero Escape as well, 999. So they have merged into the ultra visual novel team to make their magnum opus, which is 100 Line Last Defense Academy, which is a visual novel with a lot of gameplay elements. There is a turn-based tactics meat on that bone, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
which is pretty good. In terms of turn-based tactics game, it's not Final Fantasy Tactics, but it's good enough that I enjoy doing it. There's some fun concepts.
Yeah, you know, I've never been a huge fan of the genre. It's never clicked with me, but I've never played Final Fantasy Tactics, but I'm thinking more stuff like Fire Emblem. Yeah, I don't know. Does this also have permanent character death?
No, actually, there's a very funny mechanic where you can have your characters commit suicide on the battlefield to initiate a free super attack, which is really great. It's very
that's cool.
Fun.
I like that.
Yeah, and you get rewarded for it, too. It's called a nice exclamation point death.
Nice death.
Yeah, in the roundup screen at the end of battles.
A pleasant unaliving.
Yeah, of course you get ranked S ranks, of course.
Sure.
You have to. Final Fantasy Tactics, by the way, getting that re-release pretty soon, so you have a great opportunity.
Yeah, maybe I should. You know, in spite of everything, I think overall I fall on the positive side of liking Final Fantasy XII and that setting.
Ivalice.
Yeah, Ivalice.
Ivalice.
And I swear that it has nothing to do, and I know people are going to talk, so I'm getting ahead of it. It has nothing to do with the 8-foot-tall, muscle-bound bunny women, okay? I just want to be clear about that.
Sure. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you'd be totally fine if they didn't have those.
I can't say that it would be a positive change for the setting. I'm not gonna co-sign that decision. But I just, you know, I'm not a pervert. I'm not a pervert is what I'm trying to say.
Sure, sure. Well, you're not a visual novel pervert, which apparently I am, because I've been playing this game a lot. And it does the visual novel trick where you play 100 days. It's called 100 Line because you play 100 days. You have 100 days to complete, I guess, what you'd call the main story. A lot of those days, nothing happens. So that's great. Really like that.
All right. All right. Is that something that you get to choose, like Persona, where you have the option of doing stuff? It just locks you out of other stuff.
Yes. So that is kind of in the blender of this game. They've tossed, a tactics game, a Danganronpa, like kind of persuasion mini game. They've tossed a Persona in here and like more of a traditional visual novel. All that stuff has been just tossed in here. So you have a character, your milquetoast loser dude, who gets attacked by crazy monsters and then wakes up at the Last Defense Academy and is told that he will have to spend the next 100 days here defending the academy until the final attack can be launched to wipe out the enemies of humanity, right?
Okay.
And that's your setting. There's a lot of details that kind of don't matter. But you play through the 100 days, and a lot of times you have unskippable story events, so you just do those. On days off, you have two chances to do something, which there's not a lot to do. You can either talk to somebody and you learn something from them to boost your report card, which is just your stats.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go on an expedition, which is you go into this kind of like board game mode, where you move around this board and either get into turn-based battles or pick up resources that you can use to upgrade weapons and stuff like that.
Sure.
It's pretty simple. It's all kind of pretty stripped down. But you play through 100 days, and that takes a long time. It's not skimpy. You go through the whole thing, and then you get to the classic visual novel twist, which is, at the end of 100 days, very bad things happen, and your main character doesn't like that. So through the power of visual novels, he decides he's going to go back in time and explore alternate timelines, right? This is a very traditional visual novel trope. It's not always made explicit. Sometimes it is in this way, where there is like a meta narrative element where the character knows they're going back in time. A lot of times it's more like your traditional visual novel where you just have the ability to go and explore branching routes, right?
Right, sure.
But that's essentially what's happening here. The biggest problem with this game, and I am, for the most part, enjoying it, I think there's good stuff. There are moments of aesthetic brilliance. For example, the way that the characters initiate their battle modes is very similar to like Persona 3 in that they have these daggers that they plunge into their own hearts, spilling all of their body's blood out, which then like swirls around them and becomes their like military uniform.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's not as baller as shooting yourself in the head to summon yes. a ghost stand.
Yes, which is cool.
Nothing, absolutely nothing is going to beat that. Persona 3 is the GOAT. It's amazing. I love it so much.
Like, it's very cool.
It's very, very funny.
But the sequence itself, like visually and like narratively, the way it plays out is it's beautiful. I love it every single time. I have never skipped it. It's like they bleed and then they're like cocooned in their own blood and then they drown in their own blood. Like it's so fucking hardcore. And combined with like the musical sting and the aesthetic presentation of them like awakening from their like pseudo death,
mm-hmm.
And all the way stretching to the way that they can commit suicide to initiate these like special attacks, all that stuff is like fuck it. Oh my god, it's fucking nectar. It's nectar, dude. It's got the juice.
It's got the juice, huh?
Yeah, it's got the juice. There are those moments where it's like this fucking rules. Holy shit, this rules. And it's like nailing these bits so hard that I'm just like every time I start going like, oh man, this is not doing it. This is like really boring. And then it hits you with one of those and I'm like, I'm fucking back in. That kicks ass. That's so fucking cool. But it does that thing where the translators are really bad and unfunny people. So they're constantly just inserting like meme references and like movie lines and like meta references. So like one of the characters, this like the crazy girl, right, who has blue hair and she wears stupid, like over exaggerated makeup and she has like safety pin aesthetic to her clothing.
Sure.
And she's constantly talking about how she wants to, and this annoys me just personally, she constantly talks about how she wants to initiate a killing game. Just, it's a death game.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Me, it's called Death Games. You fucking idiot. Her entire character is that...
Hey, let's not split hairs.
No, I will. About this, I will. Her whole character is that she is constantly referencing, like, horror porn games.
Oh wow, I love her.
Yeah, it's great. Making meta references to them and making meta references that she's in a game and all this shit, which is very annoying. And then constantly making like movie references, and also all the movie and video game references are like really out of date too. It's just bizarre. It's like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, that's how you can tell the age of the writers who wrote the dialogue, right?
I know. I'm like, why are these translators making references that are dated to me?
Well, maybe they might be translating the original author's dated references, is what I'm saying.
I don't think that's true because they are doing word for word references, which just like I don't see how that could work.
Oh, okay.
In the Japanese, right? And they're not anchored to any particular thing because, again, it's a visual novel, so all they have to work with is a character portrait and a text box. They have free reign to do whatever the fuck they want.
Mm-hmm.
And what they want is to make a bunch of really dated bad references instead of like telling a coherent narrative.
They're talking about Rick Rolls and Chocolate Rain.
I mean, kind of.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's adjacent to that. They make a bunch of really dated video game references. Like the character looks into the mirror a bunch of times and makes the exact Silent Hill reference. Like a bunch of times. And they're referencing old movies and stuff. And I find that stuff unbearable. It's like, you are not funny. You're not funny.
You know, stop trying to use this as practice for your punch-up work. Come on.
Yeah. Again, games are badly written, and they're written by people who are bad at writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to make massive generalizations, but even the quote-unquote, like, best narrative games are usually very badly written. Like, The Last of Us have a TV show on right now, and that game is written so poorly. That game is
I don't get it.
Joke.
I played The Last of Us. I did not play the second one. Like, it's not that good. It's not that great, guys.
It is a very bad, boring version of every fucking zombie movie that has come out since Night of the Living Dead. We've told the story 100 million times, and it's a bad version of that.
I mean, it's just that, but it's also kind of by way of the, like, Cormac McCarthy's The Road. I think that's probably the reference it's wearing the most on its sleeve.
Well, and like what we talked about before, like A Boy and His Dog.
Yeah.
Except the dog is a little girl.
Except the boy's a man and the dog is his daughter.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked about games we really enjoy the narrative, but you'll notice that the pattern is that they don't talk a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Every game that has a good narrative doesn't have a lot to say.
Okay.
Not in the like meta narrative sense, in that the characters don't fucking talk a lot.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know what? One of my favorite narratives, Journey. You know how much talking there is in Journey? None.
It's like the main menu.
Yeah. Like, that's it.
And, you know, it's funny to say about visual novels, which are literally nothing but, like, reading words.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But even for this medium, it's so bad. You cannot just write references instead of telling the story. I would literally, if you just never told a joke again, I would prefer the writing. If you literally just inserted silence, the game would be better written.
See,
you cannot just use references.
The thing that I encounter way more, because I don't play visual novels, again, because I'm not a pervert, unlike some people on this podcast. You know, what I encounter way more is obviously translators inserting stuff like this into character dialogue in manga, but also a lot of these translation teams, for some reason, also, like, they insert a splash page at the end of each chapter that's like an advertisement for their group. And a lot of the times they take this as a chance to, like, reword.
Tell a bad joke.
Well, either tell a bad joke or just reword panels from the chapter to be explicitly pornographic. That I encounter, like, a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And I hate that. I always think that's super cringe. Whenever I encounter it.
We've talked a lot about these ones, but like groups that post their Discord chats, it's mm-hmm. like, hey, everybody thinks that their group chat is hilarious. It's not.
It's no.
That's
it's
funny
not.
To you. It's not funny to anyone else.
And that says a lot about you and not a whole lot about us. That's all I'm saying.
And we're doing a podcast. It's not good. And the one I really hate is when a translator will just insert their own little editorial in between panels, which is terrible. Usually they're fucking like, haha, this chick is hot, which is just like, why would you think anyone wants to read that?
On the flip side, I really do appreciate it when translators like put in little like blurbs talking about specific cultural references that most people probably aren't gonna get.
Oh, yeah, I like when they do their job, which is translation, which usually includes a lot of notes.
Yeah.
Like, that's how translation works.
People who do your job, good job. Good job.
That kicks ass.
Pat yourself on
like
the back,
like when
bud.
I was reading, you know, one of the, not that I read illegal anime. I would never do that. I always support the authors and the artists.
Always.
But, you know, occasionally you'll see something in your peripheral vision. Like when I was reading Suicide Girls, the translator, the really good one, would include like 2 pages at the end of every chapter detailing not just like the cultural references, but their thought process for how they translated like certain words and phrases and things.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's what I want. That's the good shit.
That's really good.
That's the good shit. Do that. You'll never get it for a visual novel, even though they're perfectly made for doing that.
Yeah, you just press the little button on the side and it gives you notes about like the chapter and the characters and stuff.
Yeah, do some pop-up video shit.
Yeah, it'd be so easy to implement.
It would be so easy. And, you know, just the last thing, I could talk about the plot and all the little twists and stuff, which are like kind of notable. And I do think the game has some interesting things, but it's mostly just, you know, JRPG, visual novel, tactical, Danganronpa stupid twist things. All the characters are the most shallow, tropey. It's just a collection of, like, you know, barely held together cardboard cutouts of things you've seen in other manga and anime. But there is one thing that applies to all games that I play in Japanese, because I, much like anime, I want to hear the Japanese voices. But like almost all of these games, there are like sections that don't get translations. I'm sure you've encountered this too, like when you're playing a game in Japanese and then there's like incidental dialogue during the fights or whatever, and they just don't translate that part. Well, you're like, man, wait, what the fuck?
And we've talked about that in anime and manga as well, where there is, you know, street signs, stuff like that. Like you said, incidental, like in-world text that never gets translated, either because it would take up too much of the panel or the screen, the translation team was just too lazy to put it in there. You know, the one that drives me up the wall is when you have characters texting back and forth to each other and they don't translate the text on the phones.
Yeah, that is wild. Like, why
the phone
would
itself
what
is already a text box. It's a text box drawn for you in the panel already. Just put the text in there.
Yeah, that's really dumb. Okay, so the last thing this is the last thing. About
the last thing.
There is a massive, like, load-bearing pillar of the narrative that is just lifted wholesale from Saya no Uta, and I hate that. I hate that so much. And also, one of the characters says out loud that one of the games they enjoy is Saya no Uta, so they make no bones about it. They're just lifting this whole fucking thing out and then calling the game out by name. Man, that sucks.
They're doing a George Lucas all over that dune.
It really sucks. That's really dumb and bad, and it's in a game that's already like pretty poorly written. It's just a kind of a big fuck you to the audience for like trying to care.
You know, they say that imitation is the sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah, but usually you don't put a line in the thing you're ripping off that's like, I really like the thing I'm ripping off. Usually you would avoid that. Most common sense people like would just not do that.
I don't know. I feel like maybe obviously that's very obtuse and not well executed. There are ways to do that thing though, you know, stuff like putting a frame of the original thing from another world movie in the thing, you know.
Oh, if you do like an interesting riff or subversion on it, but this does not. It is literally just, it lifts it and puts it wholesale into the thing. This is the final last gripe about this game that I am enjoying.
He just keeps going.
I'm sorry. I'm done, and then we can be done.
Okay.
So once you get through the original 100 days, you unlock the ability to go back in time and redo it, which is the actual start of the game, because that's when you get to like explore the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And when my first run through this second play, I just made a random choice at some point, and it put me on like the joke timeline.
Okay.
With no warning that I would just end up on like one of the joke timeline branches. And hey, don't do that. That sucks.
Oh,
I made a very earnest. There was like a one or the other, a Boolean choice, one or zero. And I just chose one completely earnestly. And the game was like, okay, putting you on the joke timeline. That's not cool.
Well, maybe they should give a little bit more setup and warning to the player. But I'm also against like, you know, color coding the options so you know exactly which you know timeline you're giving towards.
I don't want coding, but there is a way to imply that maybe the choice you're making is so ridiculous that the outcome would be strange. This choice was not that at all. It was a very earnest, like very narratively critical choice that I just chose between two options. Listen, and you put me on the fucking joke timeline.
You put your heart out on the line for them, and they just walked all over it. It's disrespectful, really. That's what it is. It's disrespectful to you and your time.
Yeah, it sucks. Anyway, I'm enjoying the game. Watch the transformation sequence on YouTube. It's very short. There's a couple different versions of it with like varying amounts of characters. That's another thing I like about it is the amount of characters that get deployed actually changes the animation of the thing. And there's also a sequence where after you defeat an enemy, you get to choose who gets the final blow. And you choose that from the perspective of the defeated enemy.
Oh, that's fun.
Which is so fucking cool.
That's
it's
nice.
So cool. It's so cool. Watch those two sequences on YouTube and you'll see basically all of the juice the game has. And that's anime for the week.
That's anime, folks.
That's anime.
All right. Please go check out the socials, the TikTok, the Instagram. You're welcome. I put those things out there for you.
Thank you. You're welcome. Watch those videos I just said on YouTube. Big ups the things we recommend. Death to all other things.
Oh, yeah. Right into Netflix about Realistic Chopper. Let's get that shit off the airwaves.
We need to destroy him. We need to destroy him before it's too late.
Time is running out.
Please, for God's sake, don't let that happen. One Piece may not survive through this. This may be the end.
All right. Until next time. Bye. Bye.
Don't get to exist as the heir apparent to the Muppet Empire and not be a fucking puppet guy. That's not how this works.